Welcome to B2B Healthy Copy Talks, the podcast that blends together marketing strategy, copywriting, and messaging tactics for the B2B fitness, health, and wellness industries. As a former personal trainer, award-winning writer for major health and fitness magazines, and an online fitness course creator, I know firsthand the challenges of marketing within these industries. So whether you're a seasoned copywriter, a savvy marketer, or an industry expert, you'll find valuable insights in every episode. From B2B SaaS providers and marketing experts to fitness entrepreneurs, I'll bring you interviews and discussions that spark creativity, drive growth, and jack up your professional game. We'll explore the specific challenges within the B2B world, how to stand out among the competition, and increase conversions in every area. Let's dive in. My guest today is Dana Hera. Dana is the president of Hera Communications, and she's an award-winning writer turned copywriter and content marketing strategist. And she compares the best content strategy like the quote-unquote best workout. It's whichever one you can stick with. So today we are going to get into one of my favorite topics, which is why is B2B so boring? Why does it not have to be so boring? And specifically, what are the industries considered boring and bland that really aren't when you approach them the right way? So let's jump into this. Hey there, fellow marketers. If you're anything like me, juggling multiple platforms for meetings, webinars, and calendar bookings can make you feel like tossing your laptop out the window. It can be a nightmare just setting up a simple team meeting. Am I right? Thankfully, there's a better way. I'm talking about Sessions. Sessions is an all-in-one scheduling, meeting, and presentation software that is super user-friendly. And it's so much more than a Zoom alternative. Sessions is like having a personal assistant for all your meetings. It provides meeting notes, makes it easy to share documents and screens, distills key points for quick overviews, and makes it easy for everyone to work on one board. One reviewer raved about Sessions, saying, "In a world where remote work and virtual meetings are becoming the norm, Sessions stands out as a platform that takes video conferencing to the next level. Are you ready to transform your meetings into more productive collaborations? If so, head on over to sessions.us today and try it out for free. That's sessions.us. Don't miss out on the platform that will soon be a leader in the webinar and virtual meeting space, allowing you to have better video meetings. Visit sessions.us today. And now back to our show. Okay, welcome, Dana. Thank you so much for taking time to hang out with me today for a little bit. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and as usual, I mean, we met on LinkedIn. And so doesn't everybody nowadays? Before we get into our main topic, I wanted to ask you about how you got to where you are now, because we have kind of a parallel business background. So can you talk a little bit about how you got to become the strategist that you are now?
Sure, absolutely. My professional career, I was a journalist for 10 years and absolutely loved it. Like, that was my heart's job. I thought I was going to retire from that job, but it's a rough time to be a journalist. Yeah. So from 2005 to 2015, I was a journalist and loved it. Around 2015, I thought I need some more stability because I felt like I was on shifting sand and I had young kids at home. So how else can I make a living with my words? And I transitioned into marketing. Specifically content. So my first content marketing job was with higher ed, was with the University Alumni Association. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a soft landing because I could write content, right? It was just shifting sort of my point of view and my approach, where journalists are completely unbiased and marketers, obviously we have a bias. We're trying to achieve a goal. But I just sort of dove in and said, all right, well, I'm doing this marketing thing. I better learn everything that I can about marketing. Mm-hmm. So I did. Over time, I went from working for the Alumni Association for the university to the director of marketing for the College of Engineering and began working with a lot of engineers. The university had a really strong, like, manufacturing engineering program. And I started doing content writing and content strategy and copywriting as a side hustle because I was learning all these cool things that I wanted to apply. And you can imagine in a university setting, there's just layers and layers of red tape. Like, right. It's really hard to experiment. There's not a lot of room for experimentation. So I built this sort of side business doing copywriting and content marketing, moved from the engineering school into doing marketing for a manufacturer of industrial products, and did that until I was hit with COVID layoffs, like so many people. Luckily for me, by that point, I had been running the side hustle for about 6 years and had, it was small, but I had, it was steady. I had sort of a steady base there. So I had something to fall back on and said, well, I guess we're going to do this now.
Just go.
I tell people, I kind of stood at the edge of the diving board for a really long time, and then COVID just pushed me off.
Yeah.
And luckily there was water in the pool. So
I love that analogy. That's great. Yeah.
And then that led to where I'm at now. So that was, almost 4 years ago. And since then, I've just continued to build on the copywriting and the content marketing and really developing out that content strategy piece, because that's a piece that is just missing for so many businesses.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when you say that, like, I think back to when I was doing personal training and I did in-home personal training. And if COVID had hit back then, I would have lost everything because, I mean, that was the first thing to go was any kind of face-to-face thing, but that was years ago.
Right.
So I was already in kind of the remote business as it was. So that was helpful. But hey there, fellow marketers. Before we dive back into the conversation, I've got a game changer for your content strategy. Imagine a world where the headache of coordinating, reviewing, and approving content for social media, blogs, and newsletters just disappeared. If you're struggling with team collaboration on content, I get it. We've all been there, and it's precisely why you need to hear about this tool. It's called Plannable. Plannable is revolutionizing and raising the bar on the way teams collaborate on content. Imagine crafting and seeing your posts exactly as they'll appear live across different platforms, all from one dashboard. And the beauty of Plannable is it drastically cuts down the approval time for your posts. What used to take hours can now be wrapped up in minutes. Whether you call Plannable your unfair advantage or a secret weapon in your content creation toolbox, it's changing the content collaboration game. With this beautifully designed interface, you'll wonder how you ever did content planning without it. So if you're ready to upgrade and streamline your approach to content creation, head over to Plannable.io and sign up for a free plan today. That's Plannable.io. And here's a cherry on top. Plannable is giving you 30% off for the first 3 months when you upgrade to any plan that fits your needs. That's right, any plan. So all you need to do is use the code Plannable30 at checkout. That's Plannable, the number 30. At checkout, and you're all set to transform the way you manage your marketing content. That's Plannable30 to lock in your 30% discount for the first 3 months. And now back to our show. When you talk about the businesses and the companies that you work for, they sound like they're less than exciting. Like when it comes to creating content and creating copy. So did you find it like when you were doing copywriting, did you kind of struggle to find what was exciting about it, or what was your approach to find copy that was interesting to write?
So I feel like actually the journalism background really came in handy, kind of came in clutch there, because I spent 10 years writing about tax levies and things like that, right? So and it was particularly funny to me working in the College of Engineering. I think a lot of technical people have been told that the things they like are boring. And so they just kind of accept that things they like are boring, because I kind of do my rounds around the university, around the college, and check in on professors and be like, hey, what are you working on? Mm-hmm. What's your research working on right now? And they would say, oh, nothing really interesting. And they would give me this very technical speech that I didn't understand. And I'd say, okay, but like layman's terms,
yeah,
what does that mean? And they were the coolest things.
Yeah.
This electrical engineer, she gave me this long, oh, I'm working on this technology. I'm okay, layman's terms. What is it actually going to do? What's the actual like use for this? Oh, it's a translator for baby cries. What? That's freaking cool.
They're too close to it, and they're looking at it from a whole different perspective, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, no, all those things that you were saying, those are not the interesting part, but the use of it, that's really cool. So I kind of had that, I guess, that skill developed of you just got to dig a little bit sometimes to find the cool things. So then when I went to the manufacturer, yeah, it was like, all right, let's talk about the manufacturing process and why do we do it this way? What's the purpose of this? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, this manufacturing process has that result. Really? That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know that that mattered. So yeah, and then, it, you know, because it's marketing, okay, well, do our customers know that that matters? Do our customers know that it does that and that that's why it does that? Because that's really cool. So yeah, it's not, there's no such thing as a boring industry, really.
No.
Not for everybody. Like if you have customers, then you have an audience. Right. If people are buying your stuff, then they have some level of interest.
Right.
In your stuff.
Yeah.
And everything has some kind of interesting underlayer. You just got to dig a little bit to get to it sometimes.
What I love is how there's a whole world behind some of these things. Like one of the things that struck me, I get on TikTok just to watch videos. I don't post anything myself. But the other day, something showed up in my feed that I had never heard of. It was a jigsaw puzzle convention. Where, did you ever hear of this? People compete.
I know.
It's like it is crazy. So they had, it was like this whole huge room. It was an international jigsaw puzzle contest. So it wasn't even just like a little town, or they do this thing. They had somebody who was narrating the whole thing. They had a voice of like, this is, you know, so-and-so from Australia and her record for jigsaw puzzle assembly. And they have everyone in front of a table. They have a timer and they have somebody that said, you know, counts down, go. And they dump this bag of puzzle pieces on the table. And then they have the picture of what they're supposed to make. And like it's just crazy. And so they have somebody the whole time that's talking about the technique. And, oh, this one has the end pieces done. And I'm like, I was just in awe because that's an example of something that you don't even think about. Like people are, you don't do a puzzle because it's relaxing. But there's people out there who do this professionally who are actually competing and flying to Australia to compete. Like when I saw that, I was like, see, this is exactly what we're going to be talking about, because there's a whole world out there. There's organizations. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned in a, I think it was a LinkedIn post, or you and I talked about it, about companies like insurance that are seen as kind of quote unquote boring, but they have the most interesting commercials, right? And the funniest commercials.
Yeah. I don't know at what point, like, I feel like at some point all the insurance marketers got together and said, all right, let's be funny, because insurance is technical and kind of boring and nobody wants to think about it because you need insurance when something bad happens, right? But yeah, like watch TV for an hour and keep track of how many commercials make you laugh, and they're all insurance companies. I don't know which one decided, okay, we're going to be the funny industry now.
Yeah. The she shed.
Right.
I never heard of that before.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think where that gets really funny, if you're going to get marketing nerdy about it, because it is, insurance is technical and kind of boring. And I think your average lay person doesn't understand how it works.
Right.
And yet it's relatable because we all have to have it.
Yeah.
And we're all scared of bad things happening that make us need it. So if there's something relatable there, all right, now you have a point of entry.
Yeah.
To your audience.
It's so interesting how all of them did it at once. Like as you're talking, I'm thinking they're all doing something unique and some more successful than others. Like in my mind, like I don't know about the Geico lizard guy, but I mean, some of them are, they're really innovative. I think Mayhem, that's the one, I forget.
Yeah.
I love that commercial. Allstate.
Yep.
Like and the thing is, yeah, I looked up the actor and it's like he's in these movies too. And so you get, it's just crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what movie it was. One of my friends mentioned they saw him in a movie and they're like, it was, I don't know, it's Mayhem. Like that's Mayhem from Allstate. Like that's of all the things you typecast as. And like Allstate's actually a really interesting one because I feel like, and I could be wrong because I didn't analyze it deeply, but I feel like, they kind of had two parallel campaigns going at the same time. I feel like they were running the traditional insurance play, the very reassuring you're in good hands mm-hmm. with Allstate play. And that campaign was going in tandem or in parallel with this humorous, like, Mayhem play. I don't know if they were actually running at the same time or if they were alternating them, but like I feel like those campaigns were running together. And that's really interesting, just sort of from an A-B test standpoint, right? What people are responding to.
That would be interesting to know what went on. Was it test? What did better? But that's the thing is we think that B2B, you know, they have that saying, oh, it's boring to boring. And it's only boring if you think it is. And a lot of times if you're in the business, you know, I work for a fastener company. I've told you this is literally widgets. And I find interesting things all the time about the field. And, you know, the president of the company, he said, he goes, I've been in this business 40 years and you're bringing up things I never knew about. I could find the origin of, you know, fasteners. And it's just so funny because there's something there. And I think it's also easier when you're an outsider, don't you think? Like, because you go around, like when you said you were talking to people and asking questions, like they're in it and they're like, well, you know, like you said, I was told this is boring, so it must be boring. But, you know, not if you really dig. So that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I was working with the manufacturer, so they manufacture industrial flooring tiles. So not even like pretty kitchen flooring, like factory floor tiles. And one of the lines, it's called German clinker tile. So yeah, like being the outsider, I was like, ooh, clinker is kind of a fun word. Why is it clinker tile? I don't know. Okay, well, I'm going to dig into that. And it was like, well, it's because of the noise that the tiles make when you put them down really fast next to each other. So, like, I went and recorded one of these professional installers, and he was so fast. Like, this guy was so fast putting tiles. And recorded the click, 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 click. This is great content. This is fun. Like, it's interesting.
Yeah. That's how songs like the Bee Gees, they talked about one of the songs, Jive Talking. Like that was inspired when I forget which one of the Bee Gees was going over a bridge and there was this beat from the, and he says, I was thinking like, you know, he started like it was in his head. And so as soon as he got off that bridge and he had a chance, he started writing the song. It's like, you never know where inspiration is going to come from. And I love that. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Do you ever get pushback from industries that where you try to do this thing and they are nervous about kind of going out of that box of like, no, we need to stay here and be safe with our words.
Yeah, absolutely. All the time.
Really?
It's so interesting, right? Because these B2B businesses in these less than glamorous industries, right? They bring in marketers because they know they want to stand out and they need to stand out. Mm-hmm. But then when you give them some really innovative idea, they're like, well, but nobody else is doing that. So we better be careful.
Point. Yeah.
Well, no, that's how you stand out is by doing things other people aren't doing. Really hard to stand out. You're doing the same things as everyone else. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of hesitation there. There's a lot of, well, you know, we're not selling to consumers. We're not selling to everyday people. We're selling to other businesses. Mm-hmm. Which, okay, that's true, but like the building is not buying your thing.
Right.
It's a person inside the building.
Yeah. It's a human.
It's a human. And they still like to like laugh and to learn new things and to be entertained and amused and educated. It's still a person.
So how do you like try to shift that mindset? Do you have a process that you do?
I don't have a specific process because I find that it's really dependent on your decision maker that you're trying to sway, right? Like some people are just not going to be swayed. Some are willing to give you like a little test, like a little sandbox to play in. Sometimes if you're able to sort of mock up an execution of your idea, you're like, okay, no, but maybe it sounds scary because I'm saying these things and you can't picture what that looks like.
Yeah.
And I get that. Like I'm the type of person where I picture all this in my head, but if you're not a visual kind of a person, and so I'm saying all these words and you can't picture it because you've never seen it done before, that's scary.
Right.
So if I can kind of mock up, okay, no, but this is what I actually mean. It would be not this exactly. I'm not going to put the work into something that might get shut down, but it would be like this. And then maybe they're reassured, or maybe they even get excited. Some of them are like, oh yeah, that's cool. Yeah, we can do that. So it's really kind of a person-to-person play, which I hate saying it depends, but it depends.
Well, do you ever bring in like customer interviews? Like, hey, you know, your customers are saying this, because that's a strong argument right there, you know, and they're like, these are the words they're using. Or this is the, you know, once you speak to them, it's like, these are the podcasts they listen to, or these are the shows that they like.
Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. I used that to point out that we were emphasizing the wrong features of our product. Like, okay, well, we keep talking about this feature because our first core audience, that was important to them. But you're trying to get into this new core audience, and they don't care about that. They care about this thing that we're not even talking about.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can show that because I went and talked to them and I asked them like why they even considered a competitor. And like, oh, well, they have this feature. Well, we have that feature. You didn't know we had that feature. It's kind of important.
So yeah. So now you have the receipts. You can show them. This is it.
Yes. And you don't even have to, with some of these businesses, it doesn't even have to be like a huge volume of research, like of like consumer interviews. If you have a few interviews with people that they really trust, that is actually going to sway them more than this massive survey of everybody.
Right. It's like having a referral versus finding somebody kind of on your own. Unless it's a huge sampling of people, but yeah, because they could excuse it away. Like, well, I don't know if they're really our person. You know, it's just so funny because people love to laugh. You know, you go to these comedy clubs or you watch things and you see people laughing. Are they all like in super creative fields? No. I mean, they're, you know, like my dad worked for IBM for like 40 years and he was an engineer, but I get my sense of humor from him. Like he was a riot. And he would do things like sound effects and stuff. And I once gave him like the test, the Myers-Briggs test, because I thought he was an introvert. He goes, Linda, I'm telling you, I'm an extrovert. I said, no, you can't be. You're an engineer, you know? So I gave him the test and he was an extrovert. He liked being around people. He just was not the stereotype at all, you know? So it's just funny. But he, you know, when he was at IBM and he worked there, I mean, he had to follow that whole corporate thing and, you know, but he had a sense of humor and a lot of them do. And I've worked with a lot of people who are like that, high level executives. And, you know, on the side, they play the guitar, they play drums, they, you know, they do all these other things that are, you wouldn't expect. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know like where this idea comes from that you're supposed to keep all of that at home.
I know.
And that doesn't come into your work because that makes you human and likable and trustworthy. You know, people like to do business with people. There are all the cliches, but they really are true. It is a person making that decision.
Yeah.
And they not only are you selling to a person, but they want to buy from a person. They don't want to buy from some nameless, faceless corporation. Right. Or if they do, it's a commodity. And they're going to have zero loyalty to you.
Right.
Because they'll buy from any other nameless, faceless corporation too, whoever's going to give them the best deal.
Exactly.
You can't, companies do not build relationships with each other. People in companies build relationships with each other.
Yeah, that's why I really resist all the cold pitching. Like I've worked with a bunch of copywriting coaches, and they all, one of them that I worked with said she doesn't believe in cold pitching at all. But most of the other people I've worked with said, you've got to do it. And I hate it with such a passion. And, you know, then you hear it's like, well, if you send out 100 pitches, three of them will get back to you. And it's like, to me, that's just not worth that energy. I still do. I do it if I see that the company really is a fit for me and I don't know anybody and I can't find anybody that I know within that company, I may pitch them. And sometimes it has worked out, but it's rare and I don't like it anymore doing it.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it so much. But actually, before I was a journalist, I had a brief stint about 2 years in outside sales. And I don't even mention that as part of my career journey. It was one thing. It was so long ago. Uh-huh. But it was B2B. I was selling ads, and it was awful. Like, it was the worst job I've ever had. And I worked with some people who just flourished at it. Like, they, yeah, it was their thing. There are some people who that's their thing and they love it, and God bless them because we need them.
Right.
But oh my God, I hated it. It broke me. That job broke me. I was sitting outside. I was doing cold calls and I'm sitting outside this business and it's next on my list. And I have to go in there and cold call them. And I just couldn't do it. Like, I could not physically make myself open the car door.
I would
and go make one more sales call. I'm like, I can't. I'm done.
That's funny. Yeah.
I'm just done.
I don't know what the personality is that can be just, it's not even a matter of being resilient because we're all used to rejection. You know, you get to a certain age where it's just like, hey, you know, I've had enough of that. And it's like, I can deal with it. But when you know that that's going to be your whole day, you know,
it's, yeah. Just,
I was listening to something the other day. I think it was a podcast where they were talking about sales and how they recommend that if you want to get used to getting turned down, just go into any place, coffee shop, and just ask for a discount on stuff. And don't give a reason why you think you deserve it. Just say, hey, can I get 10% off of this? And they'll say no. And you'll say, okay. But it's supposed to like help you get accustomed to being rejected. It's like, I don't want to do that. It's like,
right.
I'm just not comfortable with it.
And it's not even just that. You know, I've said that like I should have been a journalist first because it's a great training ground. I would call up people who did not want to talk to the newspaper and try to interview them. Like, I've been hung up on. I've been called every name in the book. So I'm like, and that didn't bother me. Like, that rolls off. Mm-hmm. That was fine. Somehow it was easier in there to take it as you're not rejecting me. You're rejecting the thing that I'm doing.
Right. Right.
And sales rejections, I don't know why, but it can feel a lot more personal, especially when you're selling your own personal services. Like, it's really hard to separate myself from my work. So there might be some element of that,
yeah,
in there. But yeah, I think a lot of creatives have an issue with this whole idea of selling.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think really can help is the mental reframe of helping. Because you know, they say that it's easier to sell something if you actually really believe in what you sell. And that's true.
Right.
If you actually have faith that it's good. So, because then I'm like, okay, I'm not trying to sell Linda something. I have information about something that she could really find useful. And I'm just going to help her out and be a friend and
right,
tell her about it. Yeah. Okay. Like, that's fine. And then if she's interested, then we can talk. Like, it just takes some of that framing,
yeah,
pain out of it. Takes some of the ick, yeah, I guess.
Well, I have my women friends of mine who always want to know what I do for my skin, because I use this expensive line and I've used it for a few years and I love it, and it's called Exuviance. Most people haven't heard of it, and I should contact the company because I could sell so much of that stuff just because I get asked that all the time. And mm-hmm. So you know, it's like that. Like, I'm not trying to sell them that, but if you ask me, hey, I'll tell you what products I use and, you know, and where I get it. And, you know, the company's always got sales going on. So I always say, hey, just wait, because they're going to put something 30% off like next week or something. But, well, what do you think could change to help change that marketing mindset?
It can be difficult in some industries and with some people, because there are some that just get really locked into that formal mindset, right? Of this is the way the business is done. And to a certain extent, speaking like to a marketer or copywriter, like there are some battles that you can't win, mm-hmm. right? There are some walls that you can beat your head against forever, and they are just not going to see the light. And so you can either adjust and take your small wins where you get them, or you go find somebody else. So taking that out of the equation, though, those extremists, I really think it's about sort of building on your small wins, right? It's, okay, what can we do that's creative, that is different from what other people are doing, but that's maybe not a radical departure? Let's take baby steps, okay? How, you know, maybe it's, instead of doing a white paper, we'll do a documentary-style video. Mm-hmm. All right, I mean, that's a different format, but we can still make that kind of buttoned up. Okay, all right, baby steps. Right? Well, let's keep our LinkedIn page going, but maybe we could also start an Instagram and just do really cool product photography. Okay, yeah, that's acceptable. Like, you know, you take those little baby steps, take the little wins,
okay,
and let it build. It's patience,
yeah.
But it's not that B2B execs don't want to be creative. It's that they are afraid it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't see anybody else doing it, they think, well, there's a reason nobody else is doing it. And that's fair. Like, if you have to get into their heads, that is a fair concern.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, we're not going to stand out by doing what everybody else is doing. So let's do something just a little different. And if something a little different works, all right, now I trust you to do something a little more different. Push right. that boundary a little bit farther. But you have to build up the trust and prove that it's going to be worth
yeah.
the investment.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you what could go wrong, but it's wasting money. They're afraid of that. But then what's the alternative? You know, as a copywriter, I'm sure, you know, you have this thing where it's like future pacing, like this is what it could look like. And then this is, if you don't do this, what it could look like. I just wonder if it happened to companies like Kodak, you know, the other ones that just fell by the wayside because no one wanted to change. Even IBM, you know, my dad mm-hmm. for so many years, and things will change. Either you go with it or you adjust or you fall by the wayside, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, I wonder if that's what happened within, it sounds like what, it wasn't just Kodak. There were other
yeah.
companies too, did the same thing, just refused to like to go with it.
Right. That when you have three options, you can ignore change,
mm-hmm.
you can adapt to change, or you can try to get in front of change.
Yeah.
And that's it. Those are the three options. And of the three, and they all have risks,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like of the three, ignoring is probably the greatest risk.
Yeah. Because everybody
it feels safest in the moment because you're not putting anything out there, but I think that's the greatest long-term danger.
It's like with complacency. People, you know, if you don't ever take a risk on doing anything, I'm not talking about skydiving. I mean, just like trying, you know, trying to do something that you really love to do that maybe as a side hustle, but if you're afraid and you just stay where you are, like with my personal training company, you know, mm-hmm. I did that for years. And if I had stuck with that, and that was at the time when I wanted to write for fitness magazines and I was doing that on the side and went into it 100%. If I had stayed with the personal training, you know, I would have, and COVID hit, I mean, I would have lost everything. I would have had nothing, you know, so it's always good to have like something there. Well, do you have any like tips for, say there's a B2B company that says, okay, I'm willing to try something new. I mean, would you recommend like baby steps? What would you suggest that they do?
I think the first thing you should do is talk to your customers.
Yeah.
And draw your ideas from there. And what about your product, service, company? What do they love? What's important to them? And really listen, don't try to lead their answers to the things you think are important, but find out what they actually care about and what's really important to them. Find out what else is going on that they're interested in that's not related to your product or service that you may be able to tie into. And find out if we're talking like content channels, what do they like to consume? Do they like to read? Do they like to watch videos? Do they like funny videos? Do they like educational documentary style videos? You know, what do they like to do?
Yeah.
And then that's really a risk reduction strategy there, right? Is instead of just coming up with the most creative ideas you can think of, which is fun, put some guardrails in place. Like, okay, here are the things that are really important to our customers. These are the things that I think that they will resonate with. What can we do with this? What's a creative way we can work
yeah.
with this?
So you have a foundation for your argument of, yeah.
Yeah, at least, you're at least starting from something. It's not just, I think we should do this because I really want to do it and I think it's cool.
Right.
It's, I think we should do this because our customers really like extreme sports and I think that they'll be into this documentary about surfers, whatever you want to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And this way, the risk is reduced because it's like, they've said this. So, you want to give them what they want. And then at least you have that basis for testing and trying it out and seeing what happens, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation and a lot of fun. I love this topic just because I don't think there's anything boring out there, as I said, about jigsaw. If you can have a contest, international contest on jigsaw puzzles, there's nothing that's boring as far as I'm concerned. So where can people find you? Obviously on LinkedIn, right? Is there any place else?
They can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Substack. It's my name, danahara.substack.com.
Awesome.
And if you want to know more about what I do and how I help companies, then danahara.com is always a good place to start.
Great. Well, thanks again, Dana. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much, Linda. I appreciate it.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and engaging. If so, please share it with your friends and colleagues who might also be interested in marketing and copywriting trends and innovations. And remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with another show, so stay tuned.